and welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back to discuss another movie review, this time The Silent Twins, which is a 2022 biographical drama film about two real-life twin sisters, June and Jennifer Gibbons. It is based on the book that Marjorie Wallace wrote. Andrea Siegel did the screenplay, and it was directed by a name I'm most likely about to butcher, so brace yourself. Anjaniska Smoskiniska. That's as close as we are getting to how to pronounce that. Our cast, Letitia Wright as June Gibbons, Tamara Lawrence as Jennifer Gibbons, Nadine Marshall as Gloria, Trevor Etienne as Aubrey Gibbons, Michael Smiley as Tim Thomas, Jodie May as Marjorie Wallace, Jack Bandera as Wayne Kennedy, Kinga Praise as Sister Nowak, and Tony Richardson as Dr. John Keyes, in a role that seemed as if he was there just for play setting, because I know this actor, he's a good actor, and he was absolutely underutilized in this film. Cinematography by Jacob Kiljowski. This was released in May of 2022, but released in the United States in theaters, so that was at Cannes, or is it Cannes? Whichever, September 16th of 2022. Makes sense, because it feels as if this was a film thrown together in response to a lot of the Black Lives Matter campaigns. And it was very sloppily done. And that's a shame, because the story had a lot of really good concepts behind it that they completely did not lean into. So the gist of the plot is two twins. They move from Barbados, I believe is where they were from, Barbados or Jamaica. And because of their parents' new positions, they moved to England, where it seems as if they're the only people of color there, the only African children there, which causes them to kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? They're reclusive into their own selves and only communicate with the other and isolate even their family from their life after it seems as if they're ostracized by their peers. But they do things in a very synchronized manner to the point where it becomes a bit of a concern. The family doesn't know what to do because there's not been some type of traumatic experience in their mind that would facilitate this type of behavior, because up until a certain point, they used to be very communicative. And so they're sent to a school for special needs, where Dr. Reese's character tries to get them to talk by trying to get them to record while he's not even in the room. He fails, and after realizing that Jennifer is the dominant to June submissive, decides that splitting them up is the best thing to do, except June then goes very catatonic and unresponsive, so they are forced to put them back together, and this becomes their life as they try to make a name for themselves in this kind of fantasy world that they create. But their imagination is enough to warrant June getting published. after they decide they want to go out and have a real life, somewhat ridiculous story with, it got really bad towards the second half. The ideas of being isolated racially in a country where you're unfamiliar, that is in itself a traumatic experience, but them at the time, I think, speaks to not understanding, especially with Broadmoor being brought into it, how it's set up as this facility to really help people, but really, I said a lot of reallys in that sentence, but behind the appeal of the building on the outside, on the inside, the patients are trapped and heavily medicated and sedated, and their creativity, what makes them, is neutralized. And there's so much material in that coming from two people that decided to kind of bury within each other because only they could understand completely what the other is feeling, being in this world where they're being bullied. I get where they were going with the whole spit thing, but I'm so very against spit in general. Ever in film, I don't care if it makes sense to make a point. It's just something I don't think another human being should do to another human being, even in art. But if you're going to have such a standout scene to show that they're abused to a point that their response is to become inwardly dependent on the other emotionally, then you need the parents reacting. That is one of the biggest missteps in this movie, is how much the outside perspective is lost. We have the sister Greta who has a baby and just decides, well, I'm not making an attempt anymore because you can't say Merry Christmas to me. And this is after how many years of this going on, 8 or 9 years. The ages get a little rocky because they're like, well, we've never had patients this young. And I'm like, well, how young is this young? Because I've lost track of time. And you haven't really done a good job of fleshing out time and transition period. It felt as if the dad was just like, well, this is sad, but it's happening. And then the mom also irritated, but not making any effort or discussion within themselves. That would have caused a lot of explosiveness within the household, and yet it's all muted. And I don't know why they decided it was important to not focus on how their behavior affected those around them, because that's when we would have gotten the more media reactions in contrast to their obliviousness. But that's not how they're treating the characters. June seems to be a little bit more consciously aware of the emotional impact of her choice with Jennifer not to speak with anyone besides themselves. But then they selectively decide to talk to Wayne and his friend. And then they decide to talk to Marjorie. So the idea that they would allow these people into their circle, I don't know. It really got bad when Wayne was introduced because I couldn't see at all what the attraction would be. But the idea that Jennifer was the dominant was really intriguing to me, because there's a scene where they're fighting. There's several scenes where they're fighting. And she says, you're Jennifer, you're me. So it's to indicate that she's the stronger one. She's the one, you know, because there was a moment where Dr. Reese was giving praise to June, and Jennifer, becoming jealous and possessive, says, if I die, you die. And they both decide to fall off the horse in synchronization. Yeah, there was a lot. That was very fascinating. But then they tripped it up with A, introducing the concept that June actually is the elder. And then they still could have played on that even more. Like, I'm not allowing you to live your own life, because June's the one that had her book published, the one that got inspired by the fantasy instead of the reality of the Wayne romance. Because in reality, he was a douchebag that thought they were weird and was down to clown with the weirdness, because he himself was on drugs, but the drugs they had was paint thinners. I don't know how paint thinner works, so I'm very unfamiliar with that type of high. There was no reaction to that. It was just very sloppy writing towards the end of the film. And if it wasn't for the fact that the performances were pretty okay, even though I have to say I wasn't as big of a fan of Letitia Wright's performance as I was of Tamara Lawrence, I think she had a better understanding that she knew that she was pulling her sister in this continuous cycle where things are not working out for the better. It's her decision that they do not talk. It's her decision to pursue Wayne. And it's a good thing, too, because she didn't have her virginity taken in the front seat of a car in such an unappealing and unromantic fashion. In a lot of ways, she's spared, but June has to suffer the consequences again and again. They are sent to the psychiatric ward indefinitely due to one of the oddest crimes, I think, imaginable. And it's once again trying to convey that there's a certain racial segregation within the community, but they're tiptoeing around the issue. Very tiptoeing around the issue and acting as if the Black people that are also within this family don't have a problem with that issue. And then you had an interracial couple because Greta got married to Mark, and that was just thrown out there. It doesn't find its voice. It doesn't find what it wants to say. Even though I did chuckle at a few very humanizing moments in the film, and the robbery is one of those moments. Because when you are just stupidly high, you're not really a criminal. Sometimes you just do dumb shit, and they're clearly emotionally stunted. So deciding to rob or destroy a tractor trailer and steal some pens, all of worth like $15, is their crime. It's ridiculous that they're sent to Broadmoor to be held indefinitely and drugged and have a lot of what made them unique stripped away from them on top of their racial identity. And all of that would have been a compelling story to tell, except it just wasn't told. Whatever happened to Wayne happened to Wayne. I guess he ripped off her wig and the jealousy part was so dumb. But the one laugh out loud was when they decided after one of their longer, because they were together, but then they had a really big fight. And they decided they were not going to fight ever again. She was going to get pregnant, Jennifer, with one of the patients there. And she just comes up to the table and it's like, so I found out he's a murderer. He said it was a mistake, but I did have a dream about him strangling me. Crazy motherfucker named Joe. That was probably one of the few moments in the film I genuinely liked, because it felt as if that would be something, like there was something about Jennifer's character that was, and liked to indulge in the wilder aspects of life. And June was kind of along for the ride. And then she died. Just as they were being let go of out of the facility. Because she knew that she was going to continue to destroy her sister's life if she, you know, once they were let out once again. That's me just knowing the story of June and the real June and Jennifer Gibbons, which I will talk about in a moment here. So I had to do a lot of, or if you weren't aware, there was a lot of legwork to be jumping to how they got to some of the places they did, particularly towards the last 30 minutes. And I think the use of their voices in that manner was unnecessary. I think they could have found a more creative way to show them having a different language. The idea that I'm going to ask you questions by writing them down, and then I'm just going to talk to you 2 seconds later. There was some inconsistencies within the plot itself on the talking. But if they had leaned into, like I said, Jennifer being the aggressor and it being more about control, because there was a moment in the beginning where they were on the microphones because they like to create these little soap operas, and they were talking about how you can love so much someone so much that you can want to destroy them. And that being someone that looks exactly like you, yeah, that was all really meaty things that begged to be played with. And they were like, no, we're just going to go the puppet doll route that also did not at all work. And leave you with a very tepid conclusion. Because you spent how many years of your life in that manner? You're not just going to grab yourself some braids and start walking around and then have one guy be like, hey, June, you looking good. What the fuck? Even the moment where she lost her, it should have been a moment of, I think, profound loss, but also profound freedom. Because she tried to talk without her sister's permission, and she like basically had some type of fit or seizure. So the idea that you would be stepping in a world without that, and you've been indoctrinated within that for so very long with a person that you love more than anything and anyone else, and the parents were still just around. You can tell this was not a very good movie, but as stated, it is based on a very true story. June and Jennifer were the daughters of Caribbean immigrants. The family moved, from Barbados to the United Kingdom in the early 1960s as part of the Windrush generation. They were very much creatives, but they spent several years isolating themselves in their bedroom, engaged in elaborate plays with their dolls. But that was only after their hospitalization or their being placed in the, I don't know what they called those back there, because they were definitely ostracized by their peers at the school, and they went to a different school. They refused to read, and they also refused to write. That wasn't really fully explained, as they both seemed to read and write in this series. They went to boarding schools. That's what they called them. So they tried to isolate them in different boarding schools. And after being catatonic, they were reunited. And then they spent years in their room making plays. And June wrote the novel, The Pepsi Cola Addict, which she ended up publishing. In their later teenage years, the twins began using drugs and alcohol. In 1981, the girls committed a number of crimes, including vandalism, petty theft, and arson, which led them to being admitted to Broadmoor Hospital. The twins were sentenced to indefinite detention under the Mental Health Act because in their mind, they're a problem and we need to correct them, even though they're really not bothering anyone, with the exception of the petty theft. But the idea that they're mentally unwell just adds another stigma onto their life. But the idea that they would be locked up indefinitely for petty theft, something that is akin to a slap on the wrist, is a crazy, crazy sentencing. And they remained there for 11 years. June later blamed this lengthy sentence on their selective muteness. Quote, I wrote a letter to the queen asking her to get us out, but we were trapped, placed on high doses of antipsychotic medications. They found themselves unable to concentrate. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I missed out on the quote. Juvenile delinquents get 2 years in prison. We got 12 years of hell because we didn't speak. We lost hope. Really, I wrote a letter to the queen asking her to get us out, but we were trapped. That's the end of the quote. Then it picks up with placed on high doses of antipsychotic medications. They found themselves unable to concentrate. Jennifer apparently developed tardive dyskinesia, which is a neurological disorder resulting in involuntary repetitive movements. Their medications were apparently adjusted sufficiently to allow them to continue copious diaries they had just begun in the 1980s. And they were able to join the hospital choir, but they lost most of their interest in creative writing. We saw at the beginning of the movie that they were measuring up the milk, so everything is even between them, even the amount of peas. And it's that attention to detail that someone said, yeah, we're too lazy to keep that up. And that's what hurts a movie like this. If you're going to tell the tale, you have to commit to it. That doesn't seem to at all be brought into the series. Jennifer did die. They did have this idea that if one of them were to die, the other was to live a normal life. During their stay in the hospital, they began to believe it was necessary for one of them to die. And after much discussion, Jennifer agreed to make the sacrifice of her life. As they were being transferred from Broadmoor to more open Caswell Clinic in Wales, Jennifer could not be roused. She was taken to the hospital where she died of acute myocarditis. And there was no evidence of drugs in her system. So how this happens, it's still a little bit of a mystery. And that pretty much is their story, with June going on to live a life where she isn't in media attention until this film, which absolutely, in my opinion, butchered her story. And I think that it was a lot of elements, as I pointed out, that were really relevant to be told and why it should be told. It was simply a half-assed attempt to respond to a very real social injustice movement. And that's sad. Not as sad as finding two women broken into your home. Why did they keep bringing the video? up bringing the cassette player and just standing there for hours on end waiting for Wayne. But you break into this boy's home and his parents are like, yeah, you know my son ain't shit, right?
Run, bitch! Run!
Rotten Tomatoes gave this 69% out of 84 critics' reviews that are positive, with an average rating of 6.3 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, quote, although it struggles to really get inside the true story that inspired it, The Silent Twins is still a well-acted and poignant? Dramatization.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Poignant dramatization of actual events, end quote. Metacritic, which uses a weighted average, assigned the film a score of 59 out of 100 based on 25 critics indicating mixed or average reviews. I think that's about right, because I gave this movie a 6.4 out of 10 because it was not great. But at least the performance kept you engaged towards the end, that you wanted to see how it was going to end. But it was not a satisfying ending. Don't spend $3.99 for this movie on Prime Video like I did. Wait for it to be free somewhere before checking it out. If you have lingering thoughts, opinions, blackercouch@gmail.com. You can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. Until the next time, peace, hair grease, and blacker magic.